welcome to Talk is Jericho's, the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And let's go. It's the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. I lost a storm blew out 25% of my roof last night. Oof. Stephen, thank you. Bye.
Yeah, they can't all be winners. We appreciate the effort, Duff. Oof is right. But just like a lot of you guys are starting to appreciate the efforts of Darby Allin on AEW, and wait until you hear his story. He's got a skateboarding background, has his own board coming out. He wrote a screenplay, went to film school, explains all the cool AEW entrance videos that he has. He's got some wild stories about living in his car, living in the apartment above Jimmy Kimmel's crazy cousin, and the insane stuff he did in the ring when he was still in the indies. Now he's one of AEW's top stars, and he's here. Darby Allin's Talk is Jericho debut starts now. So one of the coolest things about starting in AEW is meeting a lot of guys that I've never met before or seen a lot of, and a lot of talented people here, but one of them that's my favorite, one of my favorites is Darby Allin, and very unique guy, but also a very, very cool style. And what do you think about AEW so far?
It's almost too good to be true. Like, I don't know. It's sick as shit.
Sick as shit.
No, it's just like, being as a creative person my whole life as I was, it's just like you're in charge of your own stuff. So it's like sick just to do whatever you want.
In charge of your own kind of creativity, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, the thing is, it's like, if I'm going to get over, I'm going to get over, like, being myself instead of, like, getting something, like, shitty handed to me and fail type thing. So, at least, like, I know what I'm, you know, I'm kind of in charge of my own destiny in a way. So, that's what's awesome about it.
Have you worked in a lot of different companies where that wasn't the case?
Not really. Not too much. I used to work in, like, a company called Evolve, which is like a sister company to WWE at the time.
Yeah, they just bought them now or something, or they work together. It's like Gabe Sapolsky.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you worked with Evolve, did you have any dealings with the WWE or at all?
I'd wrestle their guys, but it was always kind of like, felt like it was like a hand it to me to like. Like, oh, like, they just, I guess they assumed everyone was, like, a super fanboy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like, you're going to wrestle this guy, so this will make you happy, you know? But, like, I'm not here to, like, I'm not a fanboy. Like, I'm not here to, like, wrestle people and, like, brag online. Like, oh, I got to wrestle this NXT superstar. Like, this is so cool. Like, I could give a shit. Like,
right.
You know, it's not cool when you have all these hospital bills and you're living in your car and stuff like that, so.
Well, let's talk about that, because I know that's something, like I said, we've worked together, had a great match, and we've had some good conversations, but I don't really know the whole history of Darby Allin, and you just mentioned something that I've heard. You did live in your car?
Yeah, I was living in there for like a year and a half. So.
Wow, okay, so where was that? Like, what part of the country?
Atlanta.
So you'd already started wrestling?
Yeah, I started wrestling in Seattle, and then I moved to Florida. Once I signed to Evolve, and then from there I moved to Atlanta because I don't feel like I was getting out of Florida what I wanted training wise, so I just left and just went to all these different schools around the country and just lived in my car.
So who did you go with when you first moved to Florida? That was with you actually signed a contract with Evolve?
Yeah.
And what does that entail?
I don't know. Just being a moron who sits in a van for 30 hours and doesn't get flights. That's pretty much what it entails.
What it was? And were you working once a week, twice a week?
Twice a month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So they have you move to Florida to work twice a month.
Yeah, because like Seattle's kind of like the black hole.
Sure.
In wrestling and shit. So, you know, nobody was going to come out. You know, no one was going to fly you out being a nobody. Because like I signed with Evolve when I was like a year in wrestling. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was just desperate to get out of Seattle.
Right, so. Right. So let's talk about, okay, so when you live in your car, how do you do that? Where's the bathroom? Where's the kitchen? Where's the bedroom?
Funny story. It's a little gross, but I live for the gross shit, so it's cool. I was, like, parked at this apartment complex, and I had, like, the worst, like, diarrhea that night, and I crapped in a Pizza Hut box, cardboard box.
Not to... not too easy to do.
Yeah, no. So that answers the question where the bathroom was.
Right, exactly.
But besides that, I used to park in like parking garages and stuff like that. And I have an Anytime Fitness membership, so I'd always cook my food at the Anytime Fitness with the George Foreman in the bathroom. And then,
no kidding.
Yeah, it was really cool. I kind of miss that lifestyle in a weird way, because like now I have a house and it's like it's cool, you know, because I could build like skate ramps and have my privacy. But I miss the lifestyle of like getting up at like 8 a.m. and being like, there's no time to be lazy. You kind of just have to get rushed out, because like the moment that hot sun hits your face and the humidity in Atlanta, like you have to go. Mm-hmm. You're not going to sit in your car and like watch like TV, you know. So I like constantly being like pushed, like go all day. So
you'd cook your food in the Anytime Fitness bathroom on a George Foreman. Would they ever anybody hassle you for that? Or
no, it was normally like 1 a.m. So like, yeah, I'd always cook at 1 a.m. and then most times people like come in, like your occasional person that comes in at 1 a.m. and then they'll be like, what the hell is that smell? And then like, you know, you just come out of the bathroom and it's just, it was fun though, you know, cause like I really don't care what people think. So,
you know, but the thing I find too, like when you're doing, like if you are just acting like it's normal, no one really bugs you. Like, oh, he's cooking his food in there. Why wouldn't you be cooking?
Yeah, no.
Cause I'll tell you something funny. We started doing over the last couple of Fozzy tours is we used to park in Walmart parking lots. Like if you get into town at like 4 a.m., you can't go to the venue till 12. And then we realized, why are we in the Walmart parking lot? No one's doing anything. So we started going Anytime Fitness. And we bought a band membership. And that's where everybody showers. You get up, you go work out. It makes your day so much better. And you don't have to worry about trying to find a place to get a shower.
Yeah.
Anytime Fitness is the best.
Yeah, no, it really is. It definitely saved my whole thing. Just because like there'd be times... Like I heard on your podcast that you had with Conan when he told you the story about me going to Mexico and sneaking in.
Well, tell you, I don't remember the exact details of it.
Yeah, because I was supposed to like fly there, but I left my passport, the booklet in Seattle, and I only had the card, and that's only good for land travel. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't go from Atlanta. So I drove, me and my wife drove like 16 hours straight to Mexico. I just like call there. I'm like, yo, pick me up from the airport. I can't get on this flight. We're driving. She's like, what do you mean? Like, so we drove 16 hours straight there and couldn't get in the country because they said something with my car tabs were expired. And I was like, come on, man. I just drove 16 hours here. And then across the border, there was a Burger King in Mexico. And then from there was like a bus that would take you to like Monterey where the show was. So I told them like, yo, is it cool if she just takes me to this Burger King and comes right back and she'll just stay the night in Texas? So like, yeah. So when we get in there, I was like, we're not going back. So we just drove straight there. And then halfway through the, I didn't know there was a security checkpoint halfway through the country.
Damn.
And then they pulled me over and like, where's your paperwork? You know, in Spanish and stuff. And I was like, I don't have any, but I'm here for a wrestling show. Show them the poster. And then the cop looks around. He's like, pay me $100 and I'll let you go. So it's like, here you go, man. And then I drove there and came back. But right when we came back, when we got back to America, we went to the Anytime Fitness and had like a big buffet in the yoga room because we were starving. We didn't eat all day, so it was sick. But that's what I'm saying, like yoga, Anytime Fitness, saved my life.
But dude, hold on a second. You just told about 7 stories in one there. So they let you, with no paperwork, they let you cross the border to go to Burger King?
Yeah.
Because you were hungry, but you told them you were going to stay and she was going to come back?
Yeah, I said, she's going to drop me off here so I can catch the bus to Monterey. And she'll come right back.
Oh, because they didn't have a problem with you going into the country. They just didn't want you taking the car.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's why. That's why. That's why. I was like, there's no way. Like, you know, the more I find, like, interesting stories like that, like, keep me, I have so much crazy, weird stories. But, like, I just love, it keeps me, like, sane in a way. Because I feel like if I get too, like, sitting on my ass and not doing anything, I get, like, really, like, insane, like.
But you know, the funny thing is, though, and it's something that we've all been through this before, because I remember the first couple times, call that machine, the first couple times I went to Mexico, I didn't have a work visa, and actually I was in Monterey to work, and you would fly through Mexico City, and when you land in Mexico City, you probably know this, you get the little button that you press, and if it's green, you go.
Yeah.
If it's red, you get stopped. And it's red very rarely, but if you get a red... you get searched, like everything. And I was really lucky I never got a red.
That's what happened to me a few weeks ago when I went to Israel.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, they've ripped me apart, and they brought me into this room, and they're like, yo, man, like, tearing my bag apart, and I had this, there's this company called Northeast Wrestling, and like I'm like their champion right now, and on the belt it says Northeast Heavyweight Champion, and then they're say, what are you in this country for? You're only here for 20 hours, because I literally flew there.
Do the show and leave, right?
Yeah, and like, I was like, I'm here for a wrestling show, and they're like, well, what weight class are you? I'm like, well, it's professional wrestling. It's kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if there is like really a weight class, I'd say, but if you had to say, I guess you'd say lightweight. And they're like, then why do you have a heavyweight championship? And I was like, oh my God, here we go. And I was just like trapped. But then I finally got released, so I'm here now.
But that's something like normal people, or especially like, you know, customs people don't understand. You're just coming in for one day. You flew all the way from the States to Israel for one day, and it's like, yeah, it's nothing to us, but to a normal person, like you must be doing something illegal.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Seriously.
So when you went through the we're going back, talking about going to Monterey, because like I said, I lived in Monterey for months back in 92, 93. You had another check when they pulled you over. Do you speak Spanish?
No.
Oh, okay. So I'm sure they probably didn't speak English.
No. Is that like halfway through the...
Yeah, like when you got pulled over again.
Yeah, no, they were just like, because it was like one of those security checkpoints.
Right.
And I didn't even know, it was in the middle of like the nowhere. Yeah, like the desert. I was like, I didn't know this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. Like, so they didn't speak any like really English. And I just kept saying, like pointing to the poster and like, you know, it was like AAA poster. So like, I guess, you know, they all know what that is. Mm-hmm. So I was like, it's me. I'm not here for bullshit. Like I'm here to wrestle. And then the guy just looked around like, cause the cameras were like filming. And he looked around, he's just like $50. And I was like, all right.
What did he say? $50?
Yeah.
He can speak that English.
Yeah. He knows his money, man. He knows his money. That's for sure.
So doesn't that didn't freak you out at all to be in that position?
Kind of, but I'm so used to living so random.
On the edge.
Yeah, like if you knew what I was doing before wrestling, like, you know, I'd be like, oh, it's just a walk in the park. That's, you know, I really like when people are like, oh, I started wrestling when I was 21. Uh-huh. And a lot of people, when they're like, well, don't you wish you started when you're 18? And I was like, no, man, because from the years of 18 to 21, the amount of weird shit that happened in my life, like, it's so much character building. Hmm. So I really like, you know.
Weird shit that, like, you know, like, personal stuff or weird shit that you were experiencing and just
everything around? Yeah, everything, just the crazy stories, you know. I like, here's the one, for example, like Jimmy Kimmel's cousin. Mm-hmm. He lived beneath me in Arizona when I was in the apartment complex when I was going to film school in Arizona, and he was like the black sheep of the family. Like he wasn't like, he was addicted to drugs, big time alcoholic, and he'd be like, oh yeah, like Jimmy doesn't ever give me any money or anything like that. Like, can I do anything for like money? And I was like, I was broke as shit already myself. But this guy was like down to do any like gnarly thing. So what he did was he pissed and crapped in his toilet for a week straight and didn't flush it. And then I gave him $3 to put his head in the toilet and gurgle around the water. I gotta show you the video sometime.
Oh my gosh.
It's crazy. But this guy, he was insane.
$3 is $3.
Yeah, he was insane. And then he'd like wear a robe. He was like naked all the time under the robe, but he would wear this robe and like let all the stray cats in Arizona like come into his living room because he'd leave food out, and then he like locked them all in there. So this guy had like 15 cats running around his house. And then one day he got pissed off at his neighbor, this like lady. And then they're like, the only thing in between them is like this wall. So he got pissed off at her, and he started like breaking. He took the vacuum and tried to break the wall, crawl through the hole, and like kill her or something. It was crazy. And then the cops came, and I'd never seen him since.
But no wonder that Kimmel didn't give him any money.
And then I just let the. Then I came in after he got taken off to jail, and I let all the cats out.
You got taken off to jail?
No, he did.
He got taken. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I came.
So you
in.
Saved the cats.
Yeah, I let all the cats out.
So you mentioned a couple things there. So you were going to film school?
Yeah.
To do like to make films?
Yeah.
That like did you ever make any movies? I mean, you make a lot of movies. We'll talk about that. Your vignettes before the matches are incredible.
Yeah. I've never made like a full length movie. I've just done shorts and I've made skate videos. But I'm actually making my first full length movie now that I have some money. Mm. Like in the around May, I already have the script written and everything like that. So should be really interesting to show my type of art.
See, it's interesting to me because I don't know if I've told you this before, if you've heard of it. You remind me a lot of Jeff Hardy in that. Have you ever met Jeff before?
No.
So very unique individual, super creative, you know, builds. His thing is dirt bike. I think we told you, dirt bike.
Yeah.
Ramps or tracks.
Yeah,
around his house.
I've seen him. Yeah, I've seen some videos and some jumps.
Jumps, and he makes the giant aluminummies. I told you, like big giants made out of a saran wrap, and his front lawn is all cut into different things. It's just everything he does is a very creative, from a creative standpoint. You have that same vibe about you.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know, like everything I do, like I want to transcend wrestling, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to be just known as the wrestler. I want to be known as the film.
You're talking to the right guy for that.
Yeah, the skater, the filmer, the, you know, whatever, stuntman, whatever it may, I really like entrepreneurs, like, you know, Rob Dyrdek, for example. Like, you know, he's not just known as a skater. He has the whole MTV thing and clothing. Let's go.
Tony Hawk has kind of done that too.
Yeah.
Is he kind of the guru in the skate world, the guy, the biggest name?
Yeah, definitely. Right.
So tell us a little about that. So how long have you been skating for?
Since I was like 9. Yeah, I've filmed a lot of things and like skateboarding and stuff like that. And it was my life for like a long, long time. But then I started wrestling when I was like 21. And I like, you know, skateboarding definitely 100% made me who I am. You know, like pain threshold and all that stuff. Like I can definitely, like, you know, nothing's harder than like falling 20 feet on concrete, you know. So,
well, that's the thing, though, those falls are very unforgiving. It's worse than falling on a snow hill or in the ocean or whatever.
Yeah. So,
when you started skating, is it just a matter of picking up a skateboard and going to a park, or are you just riding down your street? Like, how do you get into to skating?
I got into skating because I used to see it all the time. And on like television, just like it seemed like a cool, like, you know, like the Lords of Dogtown and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like an alternative like lifestyle that would be like, you know, like, oh, like you're kind of like the master of your own destiny, whatever the hell you want to say. Like, there's no teams with skateboarding.
Right.
It's just you. And I always kind of felt like a loner a lot of times. Just like, you know, not really the biggest people's person unless I'm around people that I feel like are productive or something like that.
People you relate to.
Yeah. So, you know, there I could just get on the skateboard and do my own thing, and there's, you know, do whatever you want. So it was really therapeutic.
And like, how, I mean, I guess it's hard to even like, is it the half pipes and that sort of stuff? And like, so how do you, is it just no fear and just going to give this a try?
Yeah,
go ahead. Sorry.
That's a lot of it is no fear. You know, I've a lot of it is absolutely no fear. Like, I don't know if you've seen the clip of me dropping it on this like lightning bolt looking sculpture in front of the Space Needle in Seattle.
I haven't seen it, no.
Yeah, we filmed it for like Tony Hawk's, you know, we filmed this thing for Tony Hawk where I dropped it on this lightning bolt, but it's like 20 feet off the ground. I can show you after this, but I did it with 2 broken ankles. Yeah, I just taped up my ankles because I told him I'm going to do it on like August 30th. And I like, told him all summer, like, this is the date. So when the filmers were there and stuff like that, I was like, but by the time it happened, my ankles were both just gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, I can't back out now. So let me just tape them up and go for it. But like, it's like a no fear thing. I feel like that's, you know, same with my wrestling. I feel like my wrestling's a lot like my skating, you know.
Well, there's a connection there for sure.
Yeah.
When you said, is Tony like, does he send cameramen out to film different up and coming guys? Or were you actually talking directly to Tony Hawk?
It was through his YouTube thing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I've talked to him like maybe like twice or something like that. Like I just saw him at this video premiere a couple of months ago. But besides that, like this is way back when I was like 18 and stuff like that. And it's weird because I feel like I've gotten more out of the skate world now from wrestling than I ever did when I was like murdering myself.
How old are you now?
I'm 27.
So that's the thing. Of course you're going to get more steam from it now because you have a different focus of people watching you.
That's what I'm saying. It's crazy how it works like that, because I would kill myself on the skateboard back then. Like, and then now all the companies are sending stuff to my house. I'm like, damn, where were you guys when I was like...
But it's almost the same as wrestling, though, right? Like,
yeah.
You kill yourself when you first start out, and then when you get to the big leagues, you realize, like, oh my gosh, I don't have to do anything. It's all about the connection and about yeah. the promotion and the character and that sort of thing, right?
That's what I'm saying. It goes back to like me wanting to go into all these different worlds, and I feel like it's easier now that I'm the mm-hmm. wrestler as opposed to this random kid who is, you know, broke as shit living in his car, you know?
Sure.
So it's just like...
Because I remember when we, the first week that we were doing something, I think it was my suggestion, it might not have been, but for you to ride the skateboard down and attack me. And I remember at first, you did you have a little bit of an aversion to it?
No, it's weird because like in the skate world, I feel like wrestling is kind of like, for the longest time, was like a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, the pro wrestlers, like, because I feel like a lot of gimmicks back in the day involved skateboarding, but none of them actually skated. Mm-hmm, you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Yeah, you'd get the dynamic dudes and all these guys that would come to the ring with a skateboard.
Yeah.
But if they actually try to ride it, it would look try to ride yeah. it. Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of people like were rubbed the wrong, like from the skate world, were rubbed the wrong way from yeah. wrestling. Like, oh, you're just treating us like it's like a joke. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? But I was like, guys, like, I've skated my whole life. You know what I mean? So.
But that's why I thought it was cool. We've never seen that before.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, I'm very like, you know, still wanting to, like, I got like a ramp at my house and I still like, you know, skate. And like, you know, I just want to show everybody that like, I'm not using it for a cash grab or a gimmick. Like, this is my life. And I credit skateboarding a lot to why I'm here today. Sure. You know what I mean? So
I think there's a lot of connections, even in your style of wrestling too. Like you mentioned, your fearlessness of doing some of the things that you do that you probably got from the mindset of skateboarding where,
yeah,
you know, you're completely in charge. Even though it looks crazy to others, it's not crazy to you.
Well, like the big thing about that is like, I came from just like, nothing. So in my mind, I felt like whether skating or wrestling, like what's the worst gonna happen? Like I'm gonna like, you know, break all these bones. Like I really don't care because like I had nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I still feel like I have nothing to lose, mm-hmm. even though you know, like I don't know. Every day I'm here at AEW, in my mind it feels like it's the first week. Like mm-hmm. I'm constantly whether it's not like proving people wrong, but it's constantly like trying to like do my best like every time, and it's like I'm. There's no like comfort where like, oh, this is like, you know, let's just hang out. Like
yeah, yeah.
Every week it's like, let's just do the best. It's like first impression, like every week it feels
complacent.
Like, yeah.
So. Well, that's the thing too. You mentioned about skating being, not being a gimmick, but it's part of who you are. And the best gimmicks are the real person's personality turned up to the 10th degree. And that's kind of what you have. So the skating is now part of your presentation. Not gimmick, but it connects. The connection that you have with the audience has tripled since you first were on TV, since you got here.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the biggest trip.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, for the longest time, like on the independent scene, like you, I always felt like I was a storyteller wrestler, and it's hard to have that on the indies because it's just like a big blow off match. I mean, like it's just a bunch of dream matches. There's no rhyme or reason mm-hmm. why we're having these matches. They're just people want to see them.
Right.
And I feel like for me, like being that creative person, whether it was film school or whatever, I was like, I want to tell stories. I just want to tell stories. That's all I want to do. And I feel like a lot of people got to actually like see Darby Allin, the character, as opposed to Darby Allin, the crazy man, like on the indies. So that's why I feel like it's just grown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The fans.
Where did it come with the half paint?
Oh, because my uncle was drunk driving when I was 5, and I was in the car with him, and he got in a car accident, and he died.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, in that accident.
When you were in the car with him?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He ended up dying, so a lot of me is, it was hard to say that on the indies, you know, because, like, I don't think anyone, you know, it's weird. It's just, like, here, that's all I've ever wanted is this platform,
mm-hmm.
and I've told people, like, dude, just give me the platform, and I'll just, like, so I, felt like it was a good time to tell like the story, and so I painted like half my face because that's why I got this tattoo on my chest, like nothing's over till you're underground, because like
nothing's over until you're underground.
Yeah, because like, you know, whatever you want to do in life, whatever it may be, like you can make it happen. Like some people have their like big Hollywood breaks when they're like 70,
mm-hmm.
and but if they were like 25, like, oh, I'm too old, it ain't gonna happen, I'm gonna give up on it,
mm-hmm.
they would never know. You know, it's so unpredictable in life. But I painted half my face because like 50% of me is like dead inside in the sense of like trust for people. And maybe that's why I'm such a friggin' loner at times. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's because I just don't really, I don't know. It's weird. I like people, but I'm really quiet,
mm-hmm.
standoffish at times. But I don't know.
It's something though, like very, once again, unique and original. And when you have who's in that? When you work with Mox, I notice there's people in the crowd now. A little kid, a girl.
Yeah.
Like every demographic, quote unquote, can relate to that.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, personal struggles in life, whatever it may be, you know. I feel like a lot of people obviously have that. And I feel like when there's like wrestlers that are like more open about their problems, it's like, oh, I can relate, as opposed to building this facade that I'm like, yeah, nothing. Life's awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, or superstars. Whenever someone comes up to me like, yo, I'm so excited to meet like an AEW superstar, I'm like, stop. Like, I'm not. Don't say superstar. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just a guy who's just like took any opportunity he got and made the most of it.
But you do have to understand that now that you have made the most of it and you are on AEW in front of 1.5 million people a week or whatever it is, including DVR, you know, ratings and all that stuff, that does put you in a different position where there's people like you that are gonna flock to you and go like, Darby's my guy now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I definitely get it. But I just want people to know that like I'm humble and I'm, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I want to be the same person leaving as I came in type of thing. So.
Which is really cool, yeah. So what was it that attracted you to get into wrestling after skating for so long?
It's just, so when I was going to film school, I told myself, do I want to be behind the camera filming my whole, you know, or do I want to be in front of the camera? And I felt like skating, wrestling is like the best of both worlds in a weird way with wrestling, because skating, I would do all these crazy stunts and then there'd be like two people watching and I'd kill myself and they'd be like, oh, you okay, bro? With wrestling, there's like a whole legion of people that are just like, yeah, like it's like physical Broadway, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I love it. So
I would say it's a modern day Shakespearean morality play.
Yeah, there's like
drama, there's live stunt shows, there's a connection with the audience, yeah. There's a story being told.
And I've done everything in my life. I've done physical. And I was like, this is like the best way to intertwine both worlds, like the film school and then the skating. Like, it's like there's nothing else like it, you know. So it's nice.
So how did you get in?
I just dropped out of film school and then started training up in Seattle. I moved back to Seattle.
Who'd you train with?
A guy named Buddy Wayne.
Oh yeah, Buddy Wayne.
Yeah.
I never trained with him, but he was in Winnipeg working constantly when I first started. You know.
Yeah, he talked about you a couple times.
Actually, I did meet him a few times. I never actually worked with him though.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that like was pretty respected in that.
Yeah.
Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I know he had a. I don't know if he was Brian Alvarez's trainer, but he was kind of like that, you know.
Alvarez's so, boy, yeah.
Yeah, he died now.
Yeah, I heard
yeah,
that,
he's,
yeah.
Yeah, he's dead now.
He used to draw abs on himself. He didn't give a shit, right? So he drew like a dark a black pen. With
I hit him up and I was just like, "Yo, man!" Like, I just dropped out of film school and I want to do this wrestling thing. Came to his school and at the time I was like 130 pounds, like super like light, skinny, just like, cause I was living off like $5 a week in Arizona, you know, like it was just shopping at the Dollar Tree. Yeah. And I just like looked total like shit. And then I, you know, came to his school and he didn't know what to expect at, you know, he's just like, dude, what is this guy? And then a week before I joined the school, I was dyeing my hair and I used to have it like long, bleached, like blonde. And then I put the stuff in it and all my hair fell out. And then, except the sides. So I looked like the top was completely bald. And I super glued a bunch of toy cars on the top of my head so it looked like a neighborhood cul-de-sac. So I showed up to practice. I couldn't get the cars off my head before I showed up to practice. So I showed up to practice with a beanie on. And then he's like, well, yeah, like, take off the beanie or whatnot, you know, or whatever. And then, like, there's all these car toys on my head. And I was like, I can't, you know, that's my first day of practice. I can't train with, like, car toys on my head. Not sit here and take, like, spike DDTs, but, like, it was just, like, I did the bumps and stuff like that. And he just didn't know what to expect.
Did you ever see the cars glued on your head?
Yeah, he saw them, yeah.
So and, you did that just to look like a cul-de-sac?
Yeah, like, neighbor cul-de-sac. Because I was like, my hair already fell out. So I might as well make a joke out of it, you know. But I thought they were going to come off a lot easier because I did it the night before. So here I am the whole night trying to scrape it off with a butter knife.
Oh, dude.
And it's not coming off. Like, I got to go practice tomorrow for the first time. First impressions and everything, whatever. This guy's like, this guy, is he going to take this serious? Like, is he on crack? Like,
right.
What is this? So, it worked out. And I,
How did you like training?
It was good. It was good. Like I was only there for, like I said, like about a year. before I ended up moving. But even then, like, I knew it's what I had to do. Like, I already saw the writing on the wall with, like, the people there. If you're going to stay there and get complacent and want to stay in your comfort zone, nothing's ever going to happen.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like that speaks volumes because the people I started training with are still doing jack shit.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, that's, I just knew. And I'm like, I was never wanting to have a comfort zone in life. You know what I mean? So I'm down for wherever I got to go, I'll go, you know, so.
Well, especially like you said, when you're out in the Pacific Northwest, it's a long way away from anything else.
Yeah.
So, and it's hard to get people to fly you around, you know, if you're not in your major company for sure.
There's no way.
Did you, who's your first match against?
A guy named Chris Ross.
Chris Ross. In Seattle?
It was in like Portland.
Portland, yeah.
Yeah, down in Portland.
Did you ever go up to Vancouver or anything like that?
Yeah, I've been down there.
Michelle Starr?
Not for him, no. Okay. No. ASW, I think he runs.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I've never been to his show.
Did you know Aubrey Edwards?
Yeah.
She's from up there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've known her. She does a lot of the shows that I kind of started with.
And then did you know Dr. Luther too?
Yeah, I've known him through, he used to do a bunch of like random promotions down there.
Shows up,
and he had a gym. Mm. He owned a gym down in Washington, and a lot of people from my wrestling school went to his gym. So.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So when was your first kind of break in wrestling, so to speak? Was that the Evolve deal, or?
Yeah, I'd say so in a way, but at the same time, it's so hard to tell because I always feel like the break happened like around like, you know, PWG. I was no longer viewed as this stuntman. I was no longer viewed as this guy who would only get flown to shows to kill himself. You know, I actually felt like it was starting to like break wise. It's like, okay, he's on this platform. You know what I mean?
He's actually a benefit to the show now.
Yeah, as opposed to just like, because like I was like, you know, I hated getting flown to shows, and then the promoter would be like, yeah, man, we want to get like views on our videos on Twitter. Can you kill yourself tonight?
Meaning like, what? Like, tell me some of the stuff that you would do.
Shit, like lots of crazy stuff, like just body press and the poles. Like, I broke my elbow a couple times. This bump on my head.
Yeah.
This is like from just getting my head smashed against the concrete like 3 years ago. You know,
that's there. That's a chronic. That's there forever.
Yeah, I guess I'll get surgery, but like I haven't been in a hurry, you know, whatever. So, right. Yeah, it'd always just be like, just take these gnarly, gnarly bumps. I can show you some videos and stuff like that. They're just, at the time, I was just like, because I was still learning because I left the Northwest so early.
Right.
That I felt like I knew how to wrestle, but I was still like learning on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And to set myself apart, I was like, let's just, you know, you got guys like you're competing against on the indies at this top level. And then I was like, shit, like, I think the only thing that was going to make me stand out is if I do this.
Right.
You know, and then that's why I moved out of Florida to Atlanta is because I wanted to wrestle, like train to like wrestle better and not rely on all this crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Was there somebody that you did train with that kind of helped you learn how to do things better?
No, not really. It was just going to schools and like getting like reps in and like brainstorming, having a ring to yourself for like hours and, you know, just like, so I just bought a wrestling ring for my house. I'm going to put it in the basement and stuff like that. And then my, so I just constantly want to like, it's going to be fun. I'm having all my weirdo friends from Seattle come live in the ring.
Did you move back to Seattle now?
No, I live in Atlanta right now.
Atlanta.
Right, yeah.
Because right. Your wife is Priscilla Kelly.
Yeah.
Is she from that area?
Yeah, she's lived there her whole life. So, you know, there's no reason to get her to move out away from all her little brothers, like 9 or something.
Right.
Or 11. And, you know, she needs to be in his life as much as possible.
Sure, of course.
Set him straight so he doesn't end up on, you know, like the mom and dad.
The skid row, right?
Yeah,
When you're talking about some of these things that you came up with, one of the things that we did in our match that, you know, in 29 years of wrestling I'd never seen before was having your hands taped behind your back. And you had suggested it, and I'd seen it in a match that you had with John Moxley. And it's like, how did you ever come up with that? That seems pretty insane.
Just, like I said, like long nights. Like, how can I set myself apart? And it's like weird because, like, I'm constantly, like, every day thinking of new ideas that hasn't been done before. And it's just like, and I always thought, like, maybe that would set myself, because there's a million cruiserweights that can do like awesome things,
right?
But I feel like with that, like, no one's ever done that before, so I just figure, like, shit, I, you know, be a good story, you know, especially if the guy is just like, you know, has my hands behind my back, just kind of like shit talking me or something like that, and like, come on, get out of it, come on, hit me now, and that's like, oh, backflip, whatever.
Yeah,
so
it was great.
Yeah, it was lots of fun, and to do that on this like level,
mm-hmm.
So I've always had that match in my back pocket, but to do it on this level is like, finally.
And right out of the gates too, it was probably week 3 or 4.
Yeah, it was week 3.
Really early on.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
It kind of really set, because that's something that we want to do here, is make stars. And you know, you're already a star, but that really puts you on a level where people go, holy shit, that's made you stand out.
Yeah, no, and that's what it's all about, is like, I got to go like fast, because I feel like people's attention spans,
yeah.
You know, you got to go, bah, like right away. That's why I was like wanting to like pitch that, because like, mm-hmm. I knew, like, you know, it's like my first like big impression on TV, you know, and I just want people.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because at first I was like, no way, it doesn't make any sense. And then I was like, well, wait a second, it's actually really cool, because no one's ever done that. So that's why I think we would do like a Street Fighter ever, because that would at least there's a reason for it. To me, in my head, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But then another thing that you do with your major matches is you make these really cool kind of intro videos. Are you creating them? Are you working with somebody? Are you filming them?
It's just me and my buddy Max Yoder. He films for like Thrasher magazine and stuff, mm-hmm. like that. You know, like, he lives in Atlanta, and we film skating, and we do like, then we start doing these videos and stuff like that. So it's just kind of my own little side project that I always do. And because like I said, it's like, finally, place that's, you don't have to jump through a bunch of hoops to get your stuff cleared. So you best believe I'm going to take full advantage of that.
Right.
And like, you know, especially if it's for like matches, or like, I just wanted my films to be like, see like the light of day from people. And that's a good way, you know, so.
It was really cool. The one that you did before our match, I can't remember what it was. But the one with Mox and the body bag was amazing.
Yeah.
Who was the band that you did that with?
Ghost Mane.
So they put you in a body bag on the stage.
Yeah. And just threw my ass off in crowd surfing. And it was weird, because I was more nervous for that than half of these matches I have, just because I knew there was like one shot at doing it.
Yeah.
And if the fans didn't like get into it, they're going to just drop me, and I'm going to be sitting on the ground in this body bag, and just be like, well, there goes that idea that I had for this Mox match.
Does a body bag have a zipper on the inside?
It does, oh. But where I was, I couldn't unzip myself, sure. So I would have just been sitting there, and people were like, you pick them up.
Did you tell the fans, like, here's what we're going to do?
Eric, the lead singer, did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was, he told them. He's just like, yo, guys, we're going to surf this motherfucker. And then I was like, yeah, and then I was like, oh.
It worked.
Yeah, so it was cool. I like, you know, it was cool. So I'm all down for that. I got a bunch of stuff planned, like,
that's
lined
great.
Up that I have, like, just for these upcoming
things. The one with Cody was weird, with his face on.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy walking out.
Yeah.
I didn't see the live. Did the guy walk out?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he didn't do the walk.
Okay.
He didn't do the weird walk. Yeah, he just walked out casually with the Cody mask on.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah, it was sick, though.
So you just produce these and make them yourselves, and then hand it over to the guys, AEW producer,
yeah.
or whatever, and say, air this?
Yeah, yeah. So, and then, you know, that's pretty much all I do. And that's what a lot of people, I feel like a lot of a lot of wrestlers are like, so like, you know, did AEW film that for you? And I'm like, no, you do it yourself. You
right.
know, like I feel like a lot of people are starting to learn that, like, you can just do whatever, you know what I mean?
Well, so. Take the initiative to do it. And especially in our company, we, like you said, we welcome that.
Yeah.
You know, look how much it's made you stand out. Just from these ideas that you have, it's almost like now you have to do it every time.
Yeah.
You know, for big matches at least.
Yeah, and I'm all down for that. I love it, you know, because like I said, like, if I'm going to be directing films and doing all this other stuff, I love having all this, like, work to do and staying busy.
And what's the budget for that?
Free. Yeah. the place, we're friends with the band Ghost Mane, and then the other place, it was filmed at Bar Sinister down in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
And they just let me like have the whole building to myself to film, as long as I made an appearance that night and they could advertise it.
Oh, that you actually be on the show sort of thing?
Yeah. It's like a weird goth bar. Like,
yeah.
There's like gimps and stuff there. And then, they're just like, oh, just make an appearance like in your booth and, you know, people.
Okay, gotcha.
So it can draw people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we did that. And it was fun. So, like, it's fun filming all this stuff like for no money.
Mm.
So,
It's kind of how you can do things now, though, with iMovies and all that sort of stuff. It's not hard to do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, definitely. So.
When you, I see you have drug free on your hands, so you're, is it straight edge the proper term?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that kind of a skate thing or is it a punk thing?
It's just whatever you want, I guess. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird because there's just like, I use it more from like the punk rock scene and stuff like that. And then, you know, it's just years of seeing close friends that had like promising careers, whether it's in like skateboarding or whatever, just like get hooked on like, you know, all these crazy drugs, and now they're doing meth, and I'm just like, what the hell is going on, guys? Like, this is so gnarly. Like, you know, it's just, so I kind of made a commitment to like myself that like, if I fail in life, I can't blame it on like drugs or alcohol. I can't be like, yo, like, I'm not here because of this, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's cool. I have nothing against people who want to drink. Like, I care less, but, you know.
Because some guys will still, like you mentioned, going out to the club and having your booth and all that sort of stuff. So you have no problems going out?
No. Yeah, like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, do you get crazy? I'm like, I feel like I get too crazy. That's why, like, sometimes like, I hide out and stuff like that. Like, you know, like all the stuff that people like know that when I do, like, completely sober, like, it's funny. Yeah, I'm all down for some craziness, you know.
How did you end up getting signed in AEW?
Talking to Cody. Yeah, Cody was the man who kind of like made it happen.
Had he seen you at a show or something? Or?
Yeah, I think he saw this match I had at Northeast against Penta.
Mm.
And, you know, like, it just, like at that rate, I feel like maybe he just thought I was the stunt dummy guy, you know what I mean? Like, just do all these crazy stunts. But then he saw that match and he's like, yo, this guy can actually like work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then the ball started rolling, you know? So it was very nice that I got to kind of like wrestle him my first debut in this company, you know?
Right.
So it's just like, yeah. So it was good.
I think it's cool that another one of the kind of the really cool things that led to all of us being here is that Cody was on the independent scene for a while and saw and Sammy Guevara and Joey and MJF and kind of amassed a little bit of a roster in his head, I think, before we even got started.
Yeah, so that was the biggest thing for sure. Just getting out there and seeing everybody and like that, because I feel like it's very profitable what's going on the indies. They just need it to kind of be brought out to a broader audience,
because
there's a lot of people that just won't watch wrestling unless it's on TV, I feel like.
Oh, I agree.
Yes,
I agree. It's not official until you're on TV. I mean, for a lot, it's not official until you're in the WWE. Now we're kind of changing that because our TV's so strong as well.
Yeah, that's a big thing. A problem that I have is just like, you know, you go to like the airport and they're like, you know, they're like, oh, what are you're a wrestler? Like WWE? Like, I want to like bust. I want to change that. You know what I mean? Like, I really want to. I don't want like your career to feel like that's like the only. Because in my mind, this is where I wanted to be. Not always. I don't want to use this as a stepping stone to get anywhere else. Like, this is where I want to be.
You're always looking for a platform just like this.
Yeah. So, like, why, you know, that's why I want, like, to bust my ass and to make this, obviously, you know.
Make this, it huge.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any contact with WWE or tryouts or backstage? Or?
Yeah. That Canyon, like, they were going to talk. They wanted to do something where I go to the performance center and not for a tryout, but, like, just – get signed and like go to the performance center for like a year and like debut in a year from now or some crazy shit.
Right.
And I was just like, that. And I was just like, the thing is, that's the beauty about AEW is they're just going making people instead of like, you know, like if I was there, God, it's crazy to think about. And I've known a lot of my friends that got the opportunity, AEW or WWE, they chose WWE because it's like, I just want to say I was in WWE. I'm like, come on, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't, that goes back to being the fanboy. You know what I mean? Like, you want to be like the 100th dude who never sees the light of day.
Right.
Or do you want to be on the forefront of what we have, you know? And a lot of people feel like, you know, they just want to go brag to their friends and family. Like, yo, I'm WWE wrestling.
Well, there is a lot of that. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah, so.
My thing about it is like, you know, you mentioned you're 27, Jungle Boy's 23, Max, MJF is 23. Like, there's a whole, I think you three guys are all young guys that will attract a young demographic for real. WWE, they'll take guys like you and put you in the system for 2-3 years before you come on the show, and by that time you're almost 30. 20-year-old kids don't identify with 30-year-old guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's what I was saying like the other day. I was just like, look at what I've done in the shit, we've been on TV since October.
Yeah, 13 you know? Weeks. This is 14 now.
Yeah, like look at all I've done. Man, like, and then I'm not going to say names, but I see my friends who went to WWE. I'm like, look, you know, I'm not.
They're still in the, yeah, in the NXT, right?
In the bullshit, like, of yeah. like being just like, and I knew I could tell my story the way I wanted it here. You know?
Yeah.
And that's all I've ever wanted.
You know, it's, I got a call from Hulk Hogan after the match that we had. And he's like, he goes, this is so amazing what you guys are doing, because you have, you know, these guys that no one's ever heard of before, and they're in the main event, and people believe they can win.
Yeah.
In 1 week.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's, but it's crazy to an extent, but that's also the concept of pro wrestling, is get guys over. It's not hard to do. And it doesn't mean like he wins 15 weeks in a row. That doesn't mean shit. It's give you a chance to be you.
That's a big thing. That, like, cause like, I feel like there's like this weird thing where like, on the indies, it's like you go to PWG, you get seen by Regal, and then you have your like tryout, and then you get signed.
Right.
But I always felt like they always kept saying like, "Oh, give it time for me. Like, give it time, give it time, give it time." And I was like, I knew what I had what it took to like have like, you know, reach like the audience or be a main of like player.
Right.
And then so it's good like to prove it. Where like, dude, like I don't have to go through your like system to prove, you know, all this like crap, like, you know, so it's
a star is a star.
Yeah.
You can see that.
Yeah.
And like the fact that you and I worked in week three, it's not a coincidence. It's something that I noticed and the company noticed, like, let's do it with him. And there's a couple other guys too that fit in that category. And it's why wait on it?
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason to.
That's the thing, is like, we're just sitting there knowing you have more than what it takes than half the people that they have on,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, I'm not going to say like, oh, the muscle head football player guys, but like, I'm like, I knew like I could connect to a big audience if I've just given the ball, you know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
So it's like, and I definitely proved that here.
How has it been for you? Like, you know, you mentioned walking through the airport. Do you get recognized more now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a lot of random places, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like nice. Cause you know, it's knowing that your like body of work's being, you know, noticed. But, you know, I always have time to talk to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, I love just, like, talking to people, you know, about their, like, their lives and see what's going on, you know what I mean? So.
I like that, too. And it's hard because people now want their selfie.
Yeah.
And then just to move along. And if I said to somebody, like, you can't have a selfie, but I'll talk to you for 10 minutes. Most people would say, no, I'd want the selfie.
Yeah, it's
and
crazy.
And I'd be like, no, I'll take the 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I got to meet Keith Richards a few years ago at Jimmy Fallon. We talked for about 10 minutes. Best time. Great guy. And then actually Jimmy Fallon said, do you want to take a picture? And I was like, yeah, sure. I was not going to ask him for a picture. I didn't need one. I get 10 minutes with Keith Richards to just shoot the breeze like a couple dudes.
Yeah, that's
that
what
means more, right?
Definitely. Yeah. 100%. You know what I mean? Yeah, I love just like, because I feel like people that, like, oh, can I get a picture? And then the moment they take the picture, they expect you to kind of just disappear.
Right.
And it's like, no, man, how's your life? Like, what's going on?
Right.
Like, you know, like, is everything cool? Like, you know, and then they get like, whoa, shit, like, he cares. Or
people appreciate that.
Yeah, so it's nice. But
that's cool. Just as we start to wind down here, there's a couple more questions I want to ask you about. When you said you lived in your car and you said you would cook food, what kind of food were you buying? What did you have?
Just like salmon and like a lot of shit from the vitamin shop, like
from the what?
Vitamin shop. Okay. Those like those protein shakes and the protein bars, stuff like that. Just like stuff that I knew I could like, because I'd eat like all the normal stuff in the daytime, like the yogurts and stuff,
right,
like that. But at night, I'd eat like when I'd make my full course dinners. That's when I'd, you know, like the salmon and stuff like that. I'd always save that food for night when I knew I could just.
So do you have a cooler in your trunk that you keep your food in?
No.
Or just buy it and cook it?
Yeah, sometimes the yogurt would be like sitting in the hot sun all day, and I'd be like, I'm dedicated, I got to eat this. But because I was broke, like super broke back then, you know, so it was just like, you know, I don't know. I didn't really have a good system, but it was, worked out, whatever.
But I mean, it's like I used to have all my stuff in my car because I just didn't, I don't remember if I didn't trust the guys that I was living with or whatever, but even that was kind of scary, like having all your shit in the car. Did you ever get ripped off at all or anything like that?
No.
Thankfully.
No. But the thing is, like, if you, I wear my, like, wrestling clothes, like, almost 24/7 as it is. Mm-hmm. Like, those, like, the shorts and the leggings.
The legs over top, yeah.
Yeah, like, I wear those all the time. So, even, there's nothing in my car to even worth stealing, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because, like, I had no clothes. I would literally wear the same thing, like, every day.
Yeah.
So, like, I didn't have any valuables in the car. All they would steal.
Because you didn't have any valuables, period.
Yeah, so I liked it like that. It was cool.
Yeah. So. Seemed like you don't need a lot of possessions.
Yeah, no. No, not at all. Not at all.
But you always look good, though, like the boots, the outfit. Do you paint your own shirt or jacket?
Yeah, I always, I'm really into fashion. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I'm starting my own clothing company, too.
That's right. And also, too, you're working on a skateboard as well?
Yeah, we're also making skateboards.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's a thing called Spine Buster. And because it kind of transcends, just like Thrasher magazine, people who see it, it's not called Kickflip magazine or something like that. You know, it's Thrasher. Like, oh, that's interesting. So I feel like it's for skating and it's also for like other culture. And
you're saying the name is a little bit more all inclusive.
Yeah. Like, but like
Kickflip magazine.
No, but Spine Buster is like cool. Cause it's like, I feel like it's like wrestling, but for people that don't know anything about wrestling, it still has that weird, like, name to it. Like Spine Buster. Right.
That's cool though.
So yeah. So it's kind of like how Thrasher like transcended.
So how do you start doing your own clothing line?
So I just get my friend named Steven Hernandez. He's like the main like sales guy for Baker skateboards and all that stuff like that. So he has all the production of making the skateboards and like the clothes and stuff. So that's how we're starting it. But we're just like doing it short, like small by small. And we're also going to release like my movie through that company too.
What's your movie about?
It's about a guy. He's terminally ill. He's got like 2 months to live. And then his best friend pretty much says like, what do you want to do for the last 2 months of your life, like anything? And he's like, oh, I want to go on a cross-country road trip to kill my ex-wife. So he's just like, because I feel like he got cheated on by her, and then he felt like his last like 8 years since they got divorced is like living hell. So he's like, shit, I'm just gonna go kill her.
That's great.
So it's good. It's like a dark comedy, and I got a lot of like weird twists and turns in it, and I got a lot of crazy shit planned for it. So
that's a great idea. What's it called?
Uncle John's Friend. It'll make sense when you see it.
I love it though, man. A great idea.
Yeah.
So how do you go about, and you have to finance this all yourself?
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, now that I got some money rolling in, I'm like, yo, I can finance it myself. I got a whole production crew like that makes professional films in Atlanta working for me and stuff like that. And they're like buddies. So they're going to do it for like cheap. You know what I mean?
Are you going to star in it?
I don't know yet. Mm. I want. Have you seen John Waters movies?
Of course.
I wanted to be kind of like, not like Pink Flamingo.
Please don't.
But no, but I wanted to be like where it's like there's like real stuff happening in the movie.
In the movie, yeah.
You know what I mean? So I got like a lot of ideas, like just like weird shit, like when the guy gets pepper sprayed, he's really gonna get pepper sprayed. And
method. Werner Herzog. What actually happens? Was it Divine? Is Divine still around?
She's dead now. She's dead now.
Pink Flamingo, the classic. If you guys haven't seen it, check it out. It's got a great scene in it.
Yeah, no, it's got.
That's really great idea, though, man. I mean, I think that's really smart of you doing all these things because, like I said, I do the same in different ways, but wrestling is still kind of the cornerstone.
Yeah.
But if all I ever had to do was wrestling, I'd lose my mind.
Yeah, that's how it is for me.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, that's why I'm trying to get my hands in all these different pots and just see what goes on, you know. So.
And what about for making a skateboard? Is it like having your own line of guitars where this is like Darby's had his own specifications here and this kind of wheel? And
the thing is with the skateboard, they're all going to come out coffin shaped. They're like, we already got the model done and stuff like that. We got the artwork. Cool. We just got to go to production. So they're really sick boards. Like, definitely like just special coffin shaped boards. Just
that's cool.
Yeah, see how it sells and stuff.
If you need someone to do a commercial for it, I can do it. I got skateboard experience.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we definitely got to. You know, I want to. If you have time when you're in Atlanta, you should come over to the house.
Oh, I'd love to
try to check out the ramp and stuff.
I'd love to. It's funny because when you put the damn skateboard on the mats outside of the ring, it just goes like.
Where
did you get the name Darby?
Darby Crash.
I was gonna say Darby Crash
and GG Allen.
Ah, combination.
Yeah, it's funny because like they both died of like drug overdoses.
Yeah, right.
But like I'm straight edge, so mm-hmm. It's just like plays and it's just like I was. But the reason I was so captivated by it is because of they're such polarizing personalities.
Mm.
Like I feel like people are gonna remember them even if they're not into punk rock. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just like, oh, that GG Allen guy who shits on himself,
right.
Or Darby Crash who like slices himself open glass, like. You know, it's like there's
Darby, Darby the Germs.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a great. I always thought of Darby Crash. A couple times, I even slipped and called you Darby Crash mistake. Yeah, have you ever seen Decline of the Western Civilization?
Of course,
part one. Part two was my era. That's the metal.
Yeah, yeah, I saw it.
Which is amazing. Then I went back and watched part one with Darby.
Yeah, those documentaries are so awesome. Like,
yeah, amazing.
I don't know if you've ever seen Hate It, the G.G. Allen documentary.
I haven't.
Todd Phillips, who directed the Joker movie, he directed.
No, shit.
That was his first ever movie before he dropped out of film school.
Really?
He filmed a documentary on G.G. to follow them around and all stuff. Yeah, it's really sick. And a lot of people think maybe the Joker's like personalities are kind of based
on G.G. Because I saw back in the 90s when there was tape trading. I saw a lot of GG stuff with like the turkey baster and, you know, I'm sure you've seen it all before too. Because once again, I think this might have even been, did he die in 95, 94?
93.
93,
same year I was born, yeah.
So this was right after he died then, but his goal was to kill himself on stage, but he never made it.
Yeah, he was always in prison. The Murder Junkies were supposed to, his band, his brother, they were supposed to play at my wedding.
Okay.
I thought it was sick.
Dude, you'll love this. So, you know, my band Fozzy, we've probably played, I don't know, 2,000 gigs, and the worst gig I can pinpoint. Chris, what was the worst gig Fozzy ever played? Savannah, Georgia, 2005, when we were opening for Merle and the Murder Junkies.
Oh my God.
Merle Allen and the Murder Junkies.
I've never heard that story.
The worst billing ever. I don't know how we ended up on the same bill.
That's a random ass.
It was terrible. The 50 punks just staring at us, and it was just.
Dino naked?
The thing is, we left before they went on. Oh. We were like, let's get the hell out of here. I remember there was one guy just standing there, and I just said, I realized these guys won't. They don't want to hear us. I tried to start a chant. That didn't work. So then I just went in the crowd. I just went into people's faces. I said, they want punk rock? I'll give you punk rock. And no one was really doing anything. And I went to one guy. I said, you better move. He's just standing there. You better move. He's just standing. So I push him in the shoulder. He starts spinning around. I realize he's got a full-length cast on his leg and a crutch. And he's like, whoa, boom. And I was like, thank you. Good night.
that's funny. That's random.
So, yeah, crazy stuff, man. Last couple questions for you. So now that we're here in AEW, who are you looking forward to working with? Is there other people that you've got? I mean, obviously, you had some great stuff with Cody. We had a good one. Who else do you see that you're having some good matches with?
Shit, I want to like get in there with Pac. And Omega.
Mm.
Just like people that like I know like physically are just gonna like, you know, like I just really like when they're like you could tell that they're like such disciplined athletes,
right?
Like I'm just like, that's, you know, I want to get in there with
that's
that
what you want. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just anybody like that, you know, kind of.
Gotcha.
So
and what's your favorite match that you ever had?
Shit, ever?
Is there a few that stand out for you?
Oh, I don't know. I'd probably say like either our match, just because that was a big thing because it was like week three and it was like for the championship and it's like a lot of faith, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That match or just like the Cody match that I had maybe either like last week or the first one.
That was great.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, one of those. Kind of anyone that like, okay, here, take the ball. It's up to you, like, you know, and then being able to like follow through on it, you know, and showing people that you belong in these spots as opposed to be like, oh shit, they're just putting him in there. And he's clear as day, not ready for this.
Right.
So, yeah.
Because that's the word. Getting the position is one, but actually showing that you not deserve it, but show that you belong.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and making some inroads. And like I said, the amount of fans that you've gained just in the last 3 or 4 months has been great.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Who's your favorite band of all time?
Probably Crass.
Crass.
If you're familiar with
it. The A's got the Anarchy logo. I'm not a punk aficionado, but I know most of the bands over the years. It's very, very 80s metal, especially, was very in tune with punk, especially thrash.
Yeah, definitely.
I was a big thrash guy. So, of course, you hear about the Crumbs and about the Crumbsuckers and DRI. There was a great band from Canada called Dayglow Abortions, which was just a total that style of band.
Yeah, I love all any anarcho punk or any just like, you know, like Turbo Negro. You're familiar with them. They're sick. Yeah. You know, they're like any, just like random bands like that. They're just nice.
And who's the greatest skateboarder of all time?
Jeff Rawley.
Okay.
I'd say so. Yeah,
because most people would go with Tony, but that's just because he's got the mainstream, right?
The thing is, like, Jeff's like willing to die on a skateboard, and you can tell, like, he does some crazy shit. Whereas, like, if he didn't make that, he would be dead.
Right.
So it's, you know, him or Dustin Dolan. Yeah, they're just crazy.
Well, dude, it's been great talking to you. And like I said, big fan of yours, and love. Maybe you can make me a jacket one day.
Yeah, no, just finger paint.
Man. Yeah, thanks, dude.